Welcome to another episode of Kevin Unscripted. To help you get more out of each episode, check out the podcast show notes for information, links to references as mentioned in each episode, and more. Help grow Kevin Unscripted podcast by sharing any episodes you enjoy via favorite social media platform or even by word of mouth. Like and follow me on Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok to get up-to-date notifications for upcoming episodes, comment on the content, and click the subscribe button to get up-to-date episode postings. As this show grows, we appreciate your support and encourage you to enter in any of the great giveaways. Well, this episode is special. A little surprised I was able to get this, and let me tell you, it was in flux because it's with Dr. Hodgkinson, who is in Ottawa right now, and attended a couple of press conferences that he was in. And our intentions were to sit down for a long-form format here in the hotel I'm in, but his schedule is understandably just off the wall. He's not here for a very long time. He really wanted to sit down to get into a deeper conversation, but time just didn't allow. But he was willing to do a short interview, which turned out to be about 35 minutes over the phone. And that's what you're about to hear. And I hope you guys enjoy this conversation. It's short, but I think the message is important. But for now, here's a good listen for you guys. Good short one for you for a change. Let's start out. I guess we'll start with thanking you, Dr. Hodgkinson. I appreciate your time and your willingness to phone in and give me a little bit of your time and be a part of being on this podcast, Kevin Unscripted. We met a couple of times in the press conference, and your scheduling while you're in Ottawa here is very full and busy. And the opportunity to come in person just wasn't possible, but I appreciate your willingness to phone in and be a part of this now. Can I get you to kind of introduce yourself to the listener as far as who you are while you're and why you're in Ottawa right now?
Yes, Kevin, and thank you for the opportunity of getting some messaging out to the people that follow you. Alternative media is all we have, and your contribution along with hundreds of other podcasters is absolutely vital to this this process that's underway here. Yes, I am in Ottawa. I'm embedded, I hate to use kind of fancy words, in the war room. I'm very much aware of the strategy and what's going on from the medical side, but not from the trucker's side. It's the truckers that did this. It's their show. We should all be intensely proud of their bravery, their persistence, and the fact that they get it without any medical knowledge. We're here as the supporting cast from takingbackourfreedoms.ca, a national organization that the name speaks for itself. We're here to provide comfort to the truckers and to the world that their gut feelings, their common sense is right on the mark. And we've been doing a number of presentations and speeches along those lines, along with Dr. Paul Alexander, Dr. Byron Brittle, Dr. Bonnes, and Dr. Eric Payne. We've been doing our best to provide the medical evidence in lay terms that supports this most momentous event in Canadian history, that is much more than simply the truckers objecting to vaccines, as legitimate as that was and is. They're still in place, by the way, and for everyone listening, it's peaceful. There's been no violence or incitement to violence at all anywhere. It's been very peaceful, and the fact that we're still here 2 weeks on indicates that we're winning, if not won. It's a matter of the other side bending the knee that they will eventually have to do.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at here in Ottawa. We're winning the war on the big picture, which is the preservation of democracy and taking back our freedoms that we once enjoyed.
That was actually very well said. And I like part of what you were highlighting there was the supporting of the truckers and really what that's evolved into as far as support when it came to not only the mandates, but then I think how everybody has questions about the legitimacy, about air quote, I guess, the science that we were supposed to be following. And you're representing that aspect of things as far as the science, how we're supposed to be understanding it, the implications that are in around the science in regards to, you know, the vaccine and how all of these restrictions and mandates have been implemented under the banner of for the best interest of not only each person, but the world or the public in as a whole. Go ahead.
It's been nothing but a pack of lies from start to finish. It's a meticulously orchestrated propaganda machine that is churning out stuff that is absolutely categorically incorrect, if not outright lies. That is what we're facing, a machine that's designed to deceive. That is not my concept of democracy. We expect our governments to stand up and tell the truth. And if they're doing something, we expect them to provide the evidence for which they're doing that. There was an invitation extended yesterday at a press conference to the senior officials in Health Canada, Dr. Tam and co., to come and debate with Dr. Bridle, Dr. Alexander, and myself. They failed to show. The only explanation for that, of course, is that they are afraid of showing and showing their hand, which means they simply have no evidence. They've been asked to do that repeatedly in court and refused to provide the evidence. They don't want to be slaughtered in public, which is what would have happened yesterday.
Yeah.
So clearly, the emperor has no clothes. Sooner or later, the emperor will know himself that he's got no clothes. Right now, he's not sure of that because he's hiding under a bed.
He is. That's an analogy that is shockingly almost accurate when it comes to our prime minister. I wanted to kind of ask you a little bit, well, comment, I think, with what you were saying and then follow up with a question. In regards to the point you made here with Dr. Theresa Tam not arriving and the fact that it was an opportunity that if there was a lot of well-founded documentation and science that they could have presented, it would have been an opportunity for them to have completely deplatformed your theories and you as a person if they were able to come to the table with your invitation and say, look, you guys are actually the ones that are in the wrong and not us. And the fact that they're actually following suit with how our prime minister is maybe skirting in around it in itself is questionable, because if the science was as founded as they are saying it is, and in a position to be able to make the mandates and the positions that they are, why not explain it against qualified people that are not only experts, but correct me if I'm wrong, almost authorities when it comes to these subject matters.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So
the bottom line is very simple. Nothing that they have done has worked. In fact, it's been the opposite. It's caused enormous death and distress in the general population. And by that I'm referring to masks, social distancing, the mandates of various types. We'll talk about the vaccine in a minute. That those three things have failed. We knew that they would fail. There was no evidence that they would ever succeed. But they've been introduced as draconian measures which have destroyed so many aspects of society, destroyed so many relationships, destroyed so many careers. Over a period of 2 years, they maintain this fiction that what they're doing has some support in science. It does not. And they're afraid to debate that because they know there is no support in science for it.
What about the science? I mean, that is, I'm glad you clarified that. But now when it comes to the science of it all, there's a lot to be covering here. But for the sake of, I guess, time, when it comes to the side effects of these vaccines, there's, I think, a lot of different theories out there. We have blood clots, myocarditis, you know, menstrual cycling that has been affected. There's concerns about maybe fertility issues, both in male and females. From your understanding and scientific understanding of the vaccine itself, what would you want, I think, the general public to be aware of and maybe a little bit mindful when it comes to not only, you know, considering the vaccine for themselves and that choice that they're entitled to, but then also following that on to our children and pregnancy and whatnot?
Well, it's so important to understand that this never was a public health emergency, as they're claiming. Nowhere close. The criteria for declaring a public health emergency are reduced to print in legislation, protocols, guidelines, manuals, etc., etc. Major individuals who have written those protocols are on record as saying exactly that. The person in Manitoba that was in charge of it, and similarly, Lieutenant Colonel David Redman in Alberta. So that's the first point. It never was a public health emergency. This is nothing more than a bad seasonal flu with certain nuances that admittedly are different. That's very important to understand because that is the underpinning predicate for then the use of products under emergency use authorization, for which, of course, the vaccine is the principal example, and the prohibition of early treatment with ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine is another example. Now, that was the start of the problem. The vaccine itself was therefore unneeded. This is nothing more than a bad seasonal flu. It was unneeded. It was obviously untested. Vaccines of an ordinary type typically take 5 to 10 years before they come to market because of clinical trials that are very thorough. Clinical trials are done for a very simple reason, because we don't know what we don't know. Rare things, unexpected things, need to be discovered. That did not happen. So we have a product then that was unneeded, is strictly experimental, that has been used on billions of people, including pregnant women and children, with no evidence of safety whatsoever for those two precious categories of society. Not only was it unneeded, experimental, and being used dangerously, but that resulted in all kinds of complications that have been reported in the VAERS database in the States. Massive number of major health complications, not just a headache, and deaths. But it gets even worse than that, because it's not working. The vaccine is not working. Mm. It's not only unneeded, experimental, dangerous, but it's not working. It's not, in fact, vaccinated people are now twice as likely to come down with Omicron than the unvaccinated. That's how mad this whole thing is. Nothing has worked. Everything that they've done have made the situation worse, including killing large numbers of people. And I place the responsibility of that not just at government's feet, but more particularly at the feet of the colleges of physicians and surgeons across this country and the world, who have basically decided to salute in government's general direction and viciously enforce these mandates amongst physicians, who are now petrified of losing their livelihood, their licenses to practice medicine. The two principal medical ethics of first do no harm and informed consent have been trampled on by the jackboots of these fascists who are running the show. It's absolutely outrageous. traditional medical freedoms have been trashed. So now, your doctor is the government. That should scare the jeebus out of everyone.
Yeah.
Your doctor is now the government. They are deciding what you can hear. How can you have informed consent if you're not informed? That's a major medical ethic. And we call that medical malpractice when that doesn't happen with an individual. But when that is practiced on society, that becomes a monstrous example of medical malpractice. And that is going on. Medicine will never be the same. Our traditional freedoms have been taken away from us. That is so regrettable. And the general public, meeting their doctor after the dust settles, and the likes of Alex Berenson have written a definitive history of how people have been lied to so grossly over a period of 2 years and suffered all these consequences. What reasonable person is going to then trust their GP, who knew a lot of that and chose not to tell you? That's not how medicine used to be. Medicine has changed. The government is now your doctor.
No, you, I couldn't agree more, and very well said. It kind of brought on a whole slew of questions that I would love as much time to try and go through, but I'd like to start with, I think, a few of the more important polarized ones as far as when it comes to taking a vaccine for the vulnerable that you kind of pointed out we need to protect in regards to pregnancy. Those who are pregnant and taking the vaccine, and then also our youth, you know, particularly the 5 and under, what would you want to warn people when it comes to making that choice, allowing the vaccine or administering vaccines to youth 5 and under particularly, or when you are now pregnant or breastfeeding, that vulnerable stage in life that you know, the vaccine would be concerning to take? What would you speak to that about?
Well, first of all, let's talk about parents and children. Parents should know this. Children are not dying of COVID. There hasn't been a single death from a healthy child from COVID anywhere in the world. Children brush COVID off just like a bad cold or a mild flu. So please tell me, if no child has died of COVID, please tell me why a vaccination of any type is needed. Let alone an experimental one that is known to be killing people and giving a significant number of children, particularly adolescent boys, myocarditis, a most serious problem as opposed to what the CDC describes it as. This is absolutely outrageous. Children will die because of being injected with this experimental product. They will not just die of things that we know are happening now, but they may well die of other things in the future for which there's ample scientific concern, not yet proven. But that is precisely why clinical trials should have been much more extensive, to investigate whether or not the evidence in rats for fertility is checked out for young girls. We don't know. And just maybe, fertility issues for girls in their future lives, just maybe that's important. It's not being investigated. That's tragic, absolutely tragic. And parents need to be aware of the risks that they're putting their children through for no benefit whatsoever. That's with respect to children. With respect to pregnancy, the most precious asset in society, the pregnant woman, is never, ever given anything in medicine unless it's been subjected to the most rigorous safety trials that you could possibly imagine. That has not happened. The last time I checked, pregnancy takes 9 months. How could you conceivably call vaccines for pregnant women safe, which is being said without any qualification, if only a limited number of women have been looked at for less than 9 months? Obviously, that's ludicrous. And I hope there are enough people listening to recognize the significance of one word. Thalidomide. Thalidomide. Big Pharma released a product for pregnant women some years ago without appropriate clinical trials, and it resulted in a large number of children, babies, being born without arms and legs or shortened limbs. Monstrous, absolutely monstrous. It's as if we've never learned from history.
Yeah.
Pregnant women need to be protected. This is an experimental product which is not needed, which we know is dangerous, and it needs to be fully tested, and therefore vaccinations of everybody, pregnant women and children included, and older people, that need vaccination programs need to stop immediately. They're not achieving any success, and they're killing people.
Is it true that, this is something that I picked up on your last press conference that alarmed me a little bit, that women are born with only a certain amount of eggs that are that are fertile for, you know, childbirth throughout their whole lifetime?
That is correct.
And so this vaccine, oh my goodness. So can you speak to that a little bit?
Baby girls are born with all the eggs they're ever going to have. Eggs are not produced during a female's lifetime. It's a bit different for males, spermatozoa being made all the time. But the target, the cells, it gets technical, but the cells, the nursery cells, if you like, the cells that surround the cells that make spermatozoa are a target for the spike protein, because the receptor for the spike protein is heavily expressed in the male testis. So male fertility could also be seriously under threat at a very time when we know that there has been a 40% reduction in the concentration of spermatozoa over the last few decades, for reasons that are currently totally explained. That could be yet another attack on male fertility. Just maybe, if anyone in authority is listening to this, just maybe, and I'm getting really angry here, just maybe these are reasons that should be investigated before you start injecting children with this stuff on a willy-nilly basis. It's simply outrageous.
It is, and it's shocking that the checks and balances that we have in our system are being completely ignored and trampled over.
There's so much science behind this. It's too short a podcast to get into that. But what I'm telling everyone listening is the absolute truth, supported by the giants such as McCullough, Alexander, Riesch, Kulldorff, Bhattacharya, Sukrit Bhakti in Germany, etc., Test Lorry on ivermectin, and a multitude of other very important physicians who are esteemed with impeccable credentials, who are putting it all on the line. That's the situation right now. Massive scientific indignation and outrage at what's going on, compared with governments doing this who are hiding and not prepared to reveal the reasons that they're doing it.
The myocarditis aspect too is something that I think is somewhat concerning, because you mentioned that it's the mainstream says it's mild symptoms of. Can you explain whether or not there's such a thing as varying degrees of myocarditis, and whether or not the cells regenerate within the heart, much like other organs like the liver, or other organs that might be able to regenerate over time?
Yes. Well, we do know that 60% of people who've had the vaccination, the clot shot, as I prefer to call it, 60% of people who simply have a sore arm and a headache, 60% of people show biochemical evidence with a special test called the D-dimer test that reveals they are undergoing blood clotting, but without the presentation of a syndrome such as a stroke or a heart attack. Translation. there is thrombosis, blood clots occurring in very small vessels we call capillaries. And if you block a capillary, the cells that that capillary supplies with oxygen and glucose, those cells will die. This is happening on a random basis throughout your body. We don't know the degree of it because it's impossible to measure in terms of the loss of function, because there is no loss of function at that time. But what it does result in is in the random death of cardiac, heart, muscle fibers, the pump of the heart, and brain cells, the neurons in the brain. We have, unfortunately, all of us, a pre-programmed death. We rely upon the reserve of these organs, the brain and the heart, to carry us through as long as possible. If a significant number of those cells which do not regenerate in the heart and the brain, as opposed to the liver and the kidneys where cells do regenerate, as we are destroying the reserve of cells in the brain and the heart, we are anticipating the premature onset of dementia and heart failure a decade or so earlier than would otherwise have happened. That, of course, is projected 20 years into the future, or maybe longer. That's another reason, you see, why clinical trials should have examined the reality of that event. And that has not happened. We could be looking at a tsunami of medical complications from this vaccine 20 years from now.
Because of the shortened lifespan of these cells within the heart and myocarditis symptoms. Is that correct?
No, not the shortened lifespan. The cells will die
and
not be replaced. And the remaining cells have a limited function, which is sufficient when you're young, not so that it's not declared. But if that's the reserve that you would have been relying upon as you get older, then that is our principal concern, that that might result in an accelerated onset of dementia and heart failure.
Wow. To speak to, I think, another narrative that the media or mainstream is trying to speak to when it comes to experimental, it's also said that, I guess, the technology when it comes to the mRNA technology has been around for quite a period of time, but we're calling this a novice or a new vaccine. To those who are saying that this is actually something that's been around for a long time and used with other treatments and other vaccines, and now is just something that has been implemented in the vaccine that we're seeing now, and it's not as experimental as people might think. Can you explain and highlight that and explain why maybe the narrative is fighting back and saying this isn't actually an experimental vaccine, that technology has been around for some time now?
Well, the technology was well developed over a period of 10 years, principally to develop drugs to fight cancer. The idea of nanotechnology, microencapsulation, how to fuse the nanoparticles with cells, Dr. Malone was an integral part of that. Brilliant technology. What must be said emphatically is that Dr. Malone is not the architect of this particular application of the technology into COVID. He has nothing to do with that. The man is innocent, despite all the accusations that have been hurled at him. So we have the reality that the delivery vehicle was ready to go, despite certain experiments in animals that showed that on re-exposure to the agent that they were supposedly vaccinated by with this technology, that on re-exposure to the agent that was supposed to protect them, technology actually killed them. The new infection, the re-exposure to the infection, actually killed the animals. That was well demonstrated. Again, despite that, it was still introduced. You see, the only thing that was needed to produce this so-called warp speed vaccine was a very simple thing. They had to figure out how to package a concentrated assembly of mRNA in each of these tiny nanoparticles. That's all they had to do. That's why it was produced so quickly.
So that's...
That does not mean that it was tested at all. Not at all. This is still grossly experimental, yeah. And the entire world population basically are lab rats.
Wow. And so the delivery of the mRNA is the experimental part of a component of this vaccine?
Well, both are, because the encapsulation, the delivery vehicle, let alone the contents of each tiny particle, the delivery vehicle itself was untested in humans, let alone the content of each of the nanoparticles, the mRNA.
Okay. Well, when it comes to the vaccine itself, can you tell us the difference between, you know, spike proteins and, you know, the nano, brain fart here, but the nanotechnology, go ahead.
The principal difference is that with traditional vaccines, with all previous vaccines, there was a known amount of the product injected into you to which to react to. In this case, with the mRNA vaccines, it's totally different. You're being injected with a substance, the mRNA. You're not reacting to the mRNA like you would do to a traditional vaccine. No, the mRNA is now causing each person to be the factory for the production of spike protein, which the immune system would then react to. The big point is that manufacturing in each individual is totally unpredictable. Some people will produce huge amounts. Some people will produce much less. And we believe it's the people that produce massive amounts. Those are the people that get into trouble, because the spike protein escapes the intent of the immune system to mop it all up. It escapes into the general circulation, where it reacts to receptors for the spike protein lining blood vessels and causes blood clots to occur in those blood vessels. That's an utterly unpredictable event. We do not know why some people produce massive amounts of spike protein and others don't. You see, you become the factory, but the amount of the spike protein you're producing is totally unpredictable. Whereas with normal vaccines, we know exactly the amount of stuff we're putting in you to react to.
Would that be, when you say normal vaccines, would that be a little bit of the version you've seen with the J&J and AstraZeneca earlier on when they were trying to roll out different vaccines from various pharmaceutical companies?
Well, normal vaccines for infectious disease consist of either what we call an attenuated version. That means it's going to give you the infection, but a very, very mild infection. Or they're dead bacteria or dead viruses, if you like, that are not going to cause disease that produce an immune reaction. Those are the two traditional ways that how we manufacture vaccines. Hmm. That's a well-established methodology, and it's infinitely safer than this radically new technology, which is totally untested.
Well, it's odd that at the beginning we had options between Pfizer, Moderna, you know, and like I said earlier, J&J, AstraZeneca, and now it's pretty much the two options within Canada is the Pfizer and Moderna. I think J&J now might be a little bit of an option that has been a little bit more recent again, but...
I'm sorry to interject. That discussion is totally moot. The nuances of the differences between the various products are utterly irrelevant. They should all stop immediately. They're all untested in terms of future complications. They're not needed. They're experimental. They're not working, and they're killing people.
That's awesome. I'm glad you clarified that. That's very important for, I think, people to hear that, especially from your position. So when
and
it comes,
the more booster doses you get, the greater the risk of these thromboses, the blood clots. With each successive boost, you have a cumulative risk of having a thrombotic event.
When it comes to alternative methods of treatment, I think a lot of people are familiar with the ivermectin and the hydroxychloroquine. But at the press conference, we were talking about another option. What was that option again for either early or alternative methods of treatment?
Well, for prophylaxis and indeed early treatment of certainly of Omicron, which is nothing worse than essentially a mild flu, the evidence is overwhelming now from solid research that using a dilute solution of iodine in your nose and throat is even more protective than ivermectin. And of course, iodine is cheap, it's immediately available, and it's absolutely safe. So what people need to do, I'm not a clinician, but this is self-medication. It's not on prescription. You buy a bottle of betadine, which is B-E-T-A-D-I-N-E, from the pharmacy, a concentrated solution of iodine. You get a dropper. You make a 10-to-1 dilution, by which I mean you get a separate bottle, and you put 9 drops of the iodine and 9 drops of water and 1 drop of the iodine, mix it up, and then you use that solution to put 4 drops in each nostril as you're lying down twice a day. You can even gargle with it. Hydrogen peroxide has the same beneficial effect. It's now very clear that those activities, if you wish to do it, are very protective against getting Omicron or indeed any typical upper respiratory virus, not just coronavirus.
Wow, that's not common knowledge. I don't think anybody really... there's a slew of questions that come out of that, but when it comes to talking with your local doc, your physician, your general practitioner, how come a lot of these things aren't being talked about, you know, in the privacy of, you know, these meetings with your doctor?
Obviously, if the colleges of physicians and surgeons were really interested in public welfare, they wouldn't just allow physicians to prescribe off-purpose, repurposed drugs such as ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, which in their judgment may be working for this particular patient in front of them. But they would also be advocating for the use of iodine, as I just told you, but also, and perhaps more importantly, vitamin D. Every Canadian in the winter in this country is vitamin D deficient, and every older person in a nursing home for any period of time, they're all vitamin D deficient all year round.
Yeah.
Elderly people in nursing homes to this day are not being given vitamin D, 5,000 international units a day, totally safe, very cheap, and very protective. It's not happening.
That's part of the concerning part of this all, is that it seems like the healthy alternatives and preventative measures when it comes to exercise, being outside, getting the fresh air.
Kevin, I hate to interrupt, but I'm getting a knock on my door.
Okay,
I'm going to have to.
Can I help
to the rally?
Help you wrap this up?
45 minutes.
I'll help you wrap this up just by ending it with the fact that we didn't touch on of your credentials, but I wanted to maybe get you to speak to that and also highlight the fact that this, you are also in good standing with the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Alberta, and has been recognized by the Court of Queen's Bench in Alberta as an expert in pathology. And I just wanted to, I guess in closing, we didn't get into exactly where your expertise and knowledge was, if you can maybe speak to that.
Well, just very quickly, I am still being attacked by the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Alberta and also by the College of American Pathologists. Both those attacks on me, accusing me of spreading misinformation, are still ongoing. In terms of my credentials, I'm a scholar, actually, of Cambridge University in the UK. I did my pathology training in Vancouver, British Columbia. I've been an assistant professor at the University of Alberta, doing a lot of teaching. I've been the president of the Provincial Association of Pathologists. I've run labs big and small as the director. I'm currently the chairman of an American biotechnology company, very active in DNA sequencing. I've been the chairman of the Royal College of Physicians subcommittee. I hope Snopes and AP are listening to that subcommittee. It was setting the annual examination for pathology residents to make sure that they're safe to read breast biopsies, for example. But I'm proud, more than that, my biggest contribution to health in Canada has been chairman and president at the time of Action and on Smoking and Health, which is Canada's most significant organization tackling the predatory marketing practices of big tobacco. I saved more lives in that role, along with others, than I ever did as a workaday pathologist. So that's a brief summary of my credentials. There are others that I won't bore you with.
Well, it's amazing. I appreciate your time, Dr. Hodgkinson, and talking with me, and then also fighting and standing up for what you think is right. And I hope everybody understands that you putting yourself in the line of fire is appreciated by everyone around the world, not just Canadians.
Well, thank you, Kevin. I appreciate you giving airtime for all that very important information for the general public.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.